This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Wells Tech is back on the air. This is episode 422 for Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I'm very honored to be your host once again for the 422nd time of Wells Tech, a show where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And I'm very privileged to welcome back, as usual, my co-host, my podcasting partner from west of the Mississippi, New Ulm, Minnesota's own Sally Draper. Actually, Natchez, Mississippi own, but New Ulm's her home now. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. And Natchez is just east of the river, so I guess we could distinguish it that way. But happy to be joining you for 422 and happy to be surviving December. This gets to be a really busy time of year with all our normal activities and then extra church services and all kinds of things. This past weekend, we had Christmas for kids at our church, St. Paul's in New Ulm, and really enjoyed that event. Had over 100 children there to learn about the birth of their Savior, and it was really neat. The story time actually incorporated our big screen in the sanctuary. They watched some video and saw the story acted out with some characters. One of them happened to be my husband, and we just had a really fun time.
Facebook post.
Yeah.
So cute.
He was Joseph for the skit.
Fit the part so, well, yeah.
Yeah, had a good time doing it. So, and then Saturday night, it was the exciting Martin Luther College Christmas concert, much anticipated and very well attended. I had the privilege of ushering there and got to see some Wells Techers. My heart just leaped when I looked up and saw missionary Mike Hartman's wife, Rachel, and his lovely daughters as they were attending. Her father is the one of the directors of the college choir here at MLC, and they came for the special concert. And so I got a little bit of Wells Tech connections going on there. Lots of fun.
You saw my mother-in-law and probably my brother-in-law and his family, our brothers-in-law. They were both there. So,
beautiful concert.
Yeah. So very cool.
Yeah,
I was busy this weekend too. Not probably having quite as much fun as you were, but I was getting writer's cramp over the weekend. We were writing a book, at least a chapter in a book. Actually, I was writing again last night my article for MLC's "To Continuing Ed or Professional Growth" blog was due, so I was actually a little late. So I was burning the midnight oil last night on top of the weekend's worth of writing, which was in preparation for this week's show, because as promised, we are going to be talking about chapter 4 of our book, With All Your Heart, a book about project management for churches, schools, and faith-based organizations. We've kind of traveled down the road a little bit. We began kind of at the beginning, of course, with an introductory chapter, with something on discovery. And now, I forget what chapter 3 was, but chapter 4
project
is
planning.
This week. What's that? Planning.
It was project planning.
Discovery planning. And now, one of everybody's favorite topics, meetings.
You know, I guess I'm going to say after this experience of working on the book this month and actually reading a book about meetings, Death by Meetings, I would say meetings are becoming more of my favorite topic. And I can see how important they are to the project process and how you can make your meetings really effective with some of the tips that you were able to share as you wrote this chapter, Martin.
Yeah, I don't know if either of us maybe are experts, although we certainly do spend a lot of time in meetings, and we know a good meeting when we see one. And maybe that's all the qualifications that you need. But we looked at a lot of different resources. You mentioned one of the books that we'll highlight today, Death by Meeting, which is kind of a unique way to talk about meetings. Highly recommended anybody that especially leads meetings. It's a real quick read. It's kind of cast in a fictional context, which makes it a little bit easier read as well. But I think some of the concepts in there are extremely relevant and I think applicable to any kind of meeting, whether it be a family meeting or a business meeting, a church meeting, church council meeting, project meetings, which is kind of the approach that we're taking with the book. So lots of good stuff in there, as well as some other resources that we pulled together for your reading enjoyment.
And I like it that each chapter starts with some biblical perspective, and this chapter is no different. We used a verse from Hebrews to kind of start the conversation in this chapter. It's Hebrews 10:24-25, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching.
As we kind of explored, did a little bit deeper dive in that passage, one of the concepts that came out of it is the Bible certainly encourages us to meet, and normally we apply this passage to worship or getting together for spiritual purposes. But when you define, or how we've defined meetings, at least in churches, schools, and faith-based organizations, like the topic of our book is, that's kind of what you're doing as well. You're getting together for God's purposes. And one of the things that needs to be kind of front and center whenever you meet, whether it's about a project or whatever it is that kind of concept of encouragement. So that's kind of where we started, the ability to encourage one another, to spur one another on toward love and good deeds. And essentially, your meeting purposes are those in fact good deeds.
You know, Martin, I was struck as I read what was there in terms of encouragement with reflecting a little bit on working remotely. That's something I've done, I think, for over 8 years now. And when you are working all alone, you really do suffer when you don't have other people around you to encourage you, to spark ideas off of, to discuss things with. And so I definitely could see how encouragement plays a big role in our productivity, in our ability to complete projects and things like that, because we feed off of each other to some extent. And when you have those encouraging relationships, I think it's a very positive thing.
Yep. One thing, what you say there is absolutely true, and kind of brings to mind one thing that we actually didn't cover in the book, in that, you know, some projects you do on your own, for better or for worse. And I think from my own personal experience, and I think you'd probably agree, those are the hardest projects. Mm-hmm. When you're just kind of out there on an island having to do everything from the planning to the scheduling to the, you know, the legwork to the writing to the calling to the whatever it is, you know, related to the project. It's always better, I believe, to do these kinds of things with other people. And that's kind of how God has wired us up. You know, mm-hmm. Bring people together to do his will. And that's a nice segue into kind of the next section of the book, where we used the example of Jesus and the disciples. Jesus was obviously good at what he did, and one of the things that he did a lot of was he was in meetings. He was in meetings with his disciples almost nonstop, 24/7. He was training them. He was building strategies with them for what was going to happen when he would leave. His ministry was only 3 years long, and then his disciples would stay on earth and continue that important work. And we talked about the passage from Mark 10 where James and John approach him and say, well, we want to sit at your right hand. We want to have leadership positions, and how Jesus handled that whole situation in that context was a kind of a learning moment, and one that we kind of zero in on as, whether you believe it or not, something very good and something that needs to exist within meetings, and that's this concept of conflict, right?
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. No, I'm kidding. conflict, that's a really hard concept for me, but I do see now that is an important thing. The concept is not that you want to come to blows in your meetings. You want to disagree to a point where you can't, you know, come to a consensus on things, but that you want to be able to express all your ideas completely, turn over every stone, give airtime to different viewpoints, so that perhaps in doing that, you come to a conclusion that is all the better than either or of the multiple viewpoints that might be presented. So it definitely benefits the goal, the end goal, to be able to express differing viewpoints.
Maybe the best way to understand it is I think we've all been in meetings where there is zero conflict, where it's kind of a rubber stamp approach and everybody's just yes men and women and you sail through the meeting, but there's kind of an unfulfilled, you know, feeling once you're done that, well, what did we really do? You know, did we explore all the corners? Did we totally understand maybe what God wants us to do with this particular situation or concept? So really what we're talking about is healthy conflict, where we're challenging each other, where we're doing some critical thinking, where we're asking, you know, why questions, we're trying to get at root causes and you know, kind of be the best that we can be and make these projects as successful as possible. We put together kind of some suggestions for creating healthy conflict. There are eight of them here. Some of them I think are really important that need to kind of be mapped onto any meeting agenda that you have. One of them is just make sure that everybody's aware that it's okay to have conflict and maybe to encourage it. You know, this is not a personal thing. There's not going to be any hard feelings, but disagreements are okay. Another thing is don't allow things to remain unresolved. Like you said, it's important to get to a consensus or a conclusion, and then once that decision has been made, everybody dives in and says, yeah, that's the direction that we're going, so that there's not these little, well, I told you so kinds of moments down the road where this is kind of a team concept. So I think those are two big ones going into a meeting where you're trying to create some conflict, healthy conflict, to get to a better place.
You know, Martin, I'm reminded of multiple brainstorming sessions I've been a part of where they kind of lay out the ground rules at the beginning. In brainstorming, everybody knows that anything goes. You shouldn't feel inhibited. You should throw out all your ideas and things like that. And everybody's comfortable with that. Somebody's not going to say, oh, that's dumb or whatever. You know, it's anything goes. This is the same concept that you put out these rules to play by. And I think that frees up people to, or gets rid of inhibitions or whatever however you should phrase that exactly. But anyway, it helps people to be able to have these ground rules in place and to know that, you know, it's a healthy thing to explore topics in that way. Not meaningless topics. Don't waste an hour on something petty, but on the important topics to your project.
And we talk about some of those petty topics in the book, which is actually a nice segue, again, to the next kind of concept, and that's creating an environment that is, you know, one that's beneficial for everybody involved. And we talk there a little bit about you don't have to just be all business all the time. Again, these are spiritual people coming together for spiritual purposes, and the ability to have fellowship, to pray together, to have a devotion, to share burdens is, I think, really important. Even if it's just a pure business meeting, don't ignore the fact that you know, there's a spiritual nature to us, and you have to address some of those spiritual issues. If for no other reason, to allow people to get stuff off their minds and off their chests so that they can focus once you get to the agenda and really need some brain power and some passion and energy around the topic at hand.
I'm just Boy, you just make me think of all different things, Martin. I was working on my Christmas cards this weekend, and I just took the time to reflect on the people that I felt were worthy to receive a Christmas card from me. And they're the people that I work with at church, here in the office at MLC, and in the office there at the CMM. And how much time you spend with these people in meetings and toiling away. And yeah, what a sad thing it would be to not have a healthy relationship and to care about them as Christians do in Christian love. So
yeah, those very teams good really, you know, those teams can come together and really need to come together as you kind of go to battle with some of these projects. You know, we've used the example of in previous chapters, we don't bring it up in this chapter, but of a sample VBS project, that's a hard thing, and many man and woman hours are needed to make that successful, and there will be highs and lows, and there may even be, you know, hurt feelings or whatever. There's lots of things that go on in these project teams and with the people that they serve. And if there's a good, strong spiritual foundation, everybody kind of is marching to that, you know, that same beat, it really, really makes a difference. So that makes the team a lot more elastic, makes the team a lot more resilient to some of the things that that Satan may throw at it. So
yep. The next section of the book has to do with being prepared. And this one actually gave me pause to think this month as I was reading and preparing for this discussion in this chapter of the book, and that oftentimes I show up at meetings because they're on my calendar and I know we need to get together and talk, but I haven't prepared my mind. I haven't given thought to it. I haven't come to the table ready to address the issues I know are going to be discussed in that meeting. Instead, I show up and I wait for things to unfold and I give it thought there in the moment. And that maybe is not the right way to make decisions and you know, move forward in meetings where important things are being discussed.
That prep time, really important. And I think probably the reason that a lot of our meetings are failures is because people are thinking, well, I'm just going to bring my brain to the meeting and then kind of put it in gear once I'm there. Really, the good parts of a meeting come out of the good thinking that's gone on between meetings. And it's good. It's up to the project leader to make that happen, to send out reminders, to challenge people between meetings to say, hey, read this, research this, think about this, come ready to talk about this, come ready with this. And then have the reports done ahead of time where people can read other people's information. So the meeting is not wasting time just kind of reading what somebody else could have read, you know, long before that and digested it and maybe even reacted to it. While you were talking, one thing that came to my mind, which I think we probably should go back and put in the book and kind of a good project management approach or good time management approach and productivity approach is never schedule back-to-back meetings. I used to do that and I kind of still fall into that occasionally, but I've tried to take an approach where if somebody wants to meet with me back-to-back, I'll say, no, give me at least a half hour buffer between meetings. Don't give me a 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock, a 10 o'clock to 11, 11 to 12, and expect me to be able to change gears that quickly. If for no other reason, to kind of regroup, relax, or kind of take some time after a meeting to jot down the next action items from that meeting, or do a little bit more prep for the meeting coming up, get myself in a better frame of mind for the next meeting coming up. I'm just a little bit more optimized if I've got a little buffer between meetings. And so when I look at my calendar and I don't see space and breathing room between meetings, that's a problem. And normally I'm not at my best in those kinds of meetings too. And probably recognize that in with your volunteers too, that if they're having to rush in, you know, they've just got off of work and they're driving, you know, like crazy to get to church for a meeting, recognize that, hey, they need some decompression time and maybe try and space that out or give a little buffer in there, maybe some fellowship time or whatever to, you know, give them time to kind of to be on the right page.
Yep, I'm thinking about those wonderful pastors that are out there toiling away. Teachers, too, who are so busy and have to shift gears so many times during the day. Can you imagine going from a meeting directly into a personal counseling session or whatever it may be? So I think that's great advice, Martin, definitely. Yep.
Let's save a little time here at the end to talk about some of the tools we talk about, but there's one really important item that we want to make sure we talk about, and that's just the good old-fashioned agenda. How do you structure a meeting, a successful meeting? And there are lots of different ways to do that. We just kind of put a couple templates out there and some ideas about what really should be on a meeting, some of the big hitters. And those that we kind of thought would be part of most every meeting would be a reporting time. So you've got the ability to kind of come in and say, here's the highlights from the last time we met. Here's the things we should be thinking about, those kinds of things. Another would be a decisions section. So on the agenda, it's a good idea to list the previous meeting's decisions. So it's not just kind of a rework of the minutes, but kind of a hitting the highlights of the minutes and some of the decisions that were made. A review of project objectives and requirements, that kind of harkens back to last chapter and the chapter before in discovery and planning. Discussion, you know, obviously a discussion and issues section. What's this meeting about? What do we need to accomplish? What are those things that maybe you're hoping that the people coming to the meeting have maybe spent some time thinking about, working through, researching? And then finally, never leave the meeting without an action item section being filled out. What you need to do, who's going to do it, and what the deadline is by when.
Good stuff, Martin. And in that vein, we've actually created a sample agenda. We'll be sharing that over at withallyourheart.tech, which is our book website, part of the Wells Tech site that we've carved out, and have links to the chapter and then all these sample documents and templates and things. So if you're looking for an agenda template, be sure to check out the website and download. We'll have it in Google Docs and PDF and Word format. So pick your favorite format, download it, and get to work on that.
Okay. So let's talk real briefly about some of the tool time areas that we embedded throughout this book. That's kind of the fun techie stuff that you can apply to your project management tool belt. And let me see if I've got the first one here. Doodle, which we've talked about on the show before. And this is for all you project managers or leads who have to schedule meetings with people who have busy schedules. Just a real challenge to be able to do that in today's environment. Doodle is something that I've used on many occasions, and it's simply an online tool that allows you to push out via email a number of possible days and times that the team could get together, and then people basically vote. You get the results back, you pick the best time, you send out the invite, and away you go. Just a real simple tool that I think works really well.
Yeah, sometimes I think of managing those kind of meetings as herding cats. It's almost impossible. And Doodle has come through for me on multiple occasions to have everyone check their calendar, indicate everything they could make it to, and almost always you find at least one time slot that fits for everyone.
Yeah. The next tool we talk about is just a list of potential task management systems. The reason we bring it up here is it's good to kind of track as a project leader when you need to maybe send out reminders, reach out and encourage people, just kind of get those on your radar so in between meetings you're not forgetting to keep those lines of communication open and that the things that you need to do to get things to square and let those meetings be as productive as possible. So we talk about things like AnyDo. I think we've talked about that in the show before. Wonderlist, Remember the Milk, Todoist. Those are all tools that are in many different kinds of formats. Some of them are web. Some of them are apps on iOS or Android. Some work on Windows, Mac. Just a lot of options there. One of the ones that we use, which we've talked about in the past, Trello can do that for you. And, you know, even Outlook, you know, those kinds of tools allow you to kind of stay on top of the little tasks that you need to do to make the project as successful as possible.
Yeah, and I think in this day and age, it's nice to have it on your computer if you're doing desktop, laptop, whatever these days, but also on that mobile device so that those reminders can get to you regardless of what system you're plugged into currently.
Yep. One last tool before we get to our interview, and that is Microsoft OneNote, which we've also talked about on the show before. I know it is a total lifesaver for me. I am, if I'm not in Outlook, I'm usually either in Trello or OneNote because that's where all my stuff goes. And OneNote is just a good way to organize stuff, to make sure that you've got everything together. If you've got a meeting agenda, if you want to put reports in there, just kind of a collaborative environment that allows you to collect everything related to a project versus having it strewn in email inboxes or file storage or Dropbox or Google Drive. It can all kind of go in one place. And they've made some nice improvements so that you can collaborate in there and everybody can be in there, which is kind of a nice segue because that's what are we calling him? He's our Wells Tech Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
Pastor Rob Gunther came on. We did an interview with him, and this is exactly what he talked about, the ability to kind of get everybody in the same document, collaborate. He was referring to Google Docs, which kind of fulfills the same purpose. It was just kind of fun to talk to Rob about how he applies some of his good productivity thinking to meeting management.
Yeah, I really enjoyed interviewing Robin, not only Wells Tech Hall of Famer, but you'll hear he has a new kind of superhero name. So
let's listen and find out, you know, nice tease. Let's listen and find out exactly what that name is and what Rob has to say about how he handles meetings in his church.
Happy to welcome today a Wells Tech Hall of Famer, Pastor Rob Gunther. I'm sure that's a name that regular Wells Tech listeners are familiar with. He comes to us from Grace in Kenai, Alaska, and he comes along this time to talk with us with a superhero name. We're going to call you the Faster Pastor. Maybe you can introduce yourself a little and tell us what's behind that name, Faster Pastor.
Sure. Well, I'm serving, like you said, at Grace Lutheran in Kenai, and there's not always a whole lot of stuff for the kids to do in winter when it gets really cold or weather's not nice. So there was a place that opened up in town called Jumpin' Junction, and it's inflatable bounce house stuff. So they've got the inflatable slides and the inflatable obstacle courses. And now they have a rule that adults aren't allowed to go on the stuff, and they didn't at the time. That might have changed after I was there, come to think of it. But we had a field trip at our school to go to Jumpin' Junction, and the principal and I decided we would entertain the kids, and we'd go through the obstacle course, and we would race. And it was a grueling two-minute battle, but by the end, I came out ahead by a couple of seconds. And so the kids said that Pastor is faster, and so the name kind of stuck. I guess technically, I'm the only one who actually calls me that still.
Well, not anymore.
Right, but Pastor is what the kids would call me now. I insist that they do or I don't answer them. I was thinking about what do I do in my productivity and my ministry, and I want to try and find ways that I can get some of the admin stuff done more quickly so that I can focus my time and my energy on writing that sermon a little bit better or memorizing it a little bit more or free up my time to go meet with a prospect, go do a lunch. So I want to get all that, the admin busy work done faster. And so it's been kind of my ministry goal to find tips and tricks. And, of course, you guys have been a huge help in that. You've been helping me out for a couple of years when I need a tip. How do I do this more efficiently? So I've been putting together a website now, thefasterpastor.com, to share some of those tips with others. So that's the nickname, the Faster Pastor.
Very cool. The topic of the show and the chapter in the book that we're writing on project management, trying to help churches and schools and faith-based organizations be good stewards of their time, that we've been titled With All Your Heart, is the topic of meetings. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who attend meetings who'd like those to be done as fast as possible, because it's not been a pleasant experience for a lot of people. Why maybe do you identify meetings as a topic worth talking about?
Well, for one, I don't consider any topic off the table and being more productive and efficient. So this is just one that I think consumes a lot of a pastor's week. I don't think any pastor got into the ministry going, you know what I want to really do with my life is sit in meetings all day. And I don't want to just do it faster, though. I want to do it more efficiently, too, and just get rid of some of the paper shuffling and some of the stuff that really slows it down. So I wanted to look for ways to streamline it, but also to better archive it and to better document what we did at the meetings. And the system I've come up with, I think, really works well. So I've been very pleased with it.
And we would just love to hear about that system, Pastor Gunther. What kind of strategies have you put in place there at Grace?
Sure. So it's really pretty straightforward and simple, and the tools I use are all free, is what I like about it, too. So first, what I do is I created a Google Doc, which, of course, is free. You could do it with any online web-based thing, but it's got to be web-based is key here. And I make it so that anyone can edit it. It's open to edit for anyone. And then I make a friendly URL, so my website with the / and then the keyword, that all of my councilmen can log into ahead of time. And simplicity is key here. They don't have to actually log in. So let me rephrase that. They just have to go to this website with the friendly URL. And it opens up this doc that they can just start typing in. And some of them were like, wait a second, where do I hit save? You don't have to. You're done typing, you close it. And they were impressed by the simplicity of it. So what we do now is any council report needs to be submitted ahead of time. And so they put it into this Google Doc, and then come meeting time, we project it up on the screen, and we run through the reports. And what it's really done is it's streamlined those reports. We don't do the paper shuffle, you know, we're playing the color game. Mine's on the yellow. Is yellow? I've got a pink one. No, that one's red. No, you're colorblind. You know, we got into a lot of that, the paper shuffling. And it's all just right up on the screen now. We project it, or we've got our smart boards, really. And we just kind of scroll through all those reports. And it's really been tremendous in streamlining that process of just the reports, really. And it's been very beneficial in a number of ways. But that's the basic gist of the process. The reports are up on the screen, submitted ahead of time.
So do you provide some initial structure?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Do you provide some initial structure or template for them to begin with?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. It's just there's a template where each guy has their spot. These are things I want to report. These are action items I need. These are, you know, questions I have with the council. And they just fill in those bullet points. It literally takes them a couple of minutes. And then what I do for the next month is I'll copy that doc and save it as the date of that meeting. And then I'll go back in. Once I make a copy of it, I'll go back into the original and just delete the data out. So the template just stays right there, same page, same spot, same place they go to every month. So
does that document serve multiple purposes? Is it just a reporting document, or do you actually record the business of the meeting, action items, decisions, notes in that document, or do you use something else for that?
Well, our minutes are really pretty short, because all of our reports are all right there. So once I make a copy of it, we'll make corrections or additions in the meeting itself. But for the most part, our minutes are now half a page and refer back to the reports. So a lot of it is already kind of done for the secretary, the recording secretary, because everything in the report is printed out in that one page. And then what we'll also do is we'll take a link to that document and we put it in another document that's got all of our minutes housed. So it's just you click on this link and it'll jump to the minutes from this meeting, and you click on another link and it'll jump to those minutes, which has made it really nice to refer back to our minutes. Before it was someone's got the binder that has all the minutes in them.
Right.
Where is it? Oh, shoot, I left it at home. Okay, well, who remembers what we did? Does anybody have a copy? And we kind of, again, go back to the paper game, shuffling stuff around. Now we just click, or better still, because it's all in Google Drive, I can run a search so I can say, council meeting playground, and we'll find all the minutes where we talked about the new playground we're going to add, just like that. So it's really streamlined some of that archiving, and the minutes keeping as well has been a huge blessing. So,
I was just going to say, we do the paper shuffle, and we all have binders of paper. So it's not just the recording secretary that carries around those binders, but we all do. So I can definitely see the benefit. What about you guys? Have your council members recognized benefit? Have there been positive impacts? Shorter meetings? Can you tell a difference?
Well, absolutely, our meetings have been shorter. I don't think we've had a meeting that's gone more than, you know, hour 15, and it used to be three-hour meetings. But more importantly than that, we're spending time, I think, focusing on more important stuff. Once we get the reports kind of done and out of the way, those take now 20 minutes instead of 90. We get to spend the rest of the meeting being proactive and saying, let's reevaluate what is our mission here, or what are some goals we want to set for ourselves in the year ahead. In the past, once we're done with those 90 minutes of reports, guys are already kind of tired and, all right, let's go home. It's already, you know, 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Now we're done with that. Great. We have time, I think, to focus on more important things, to be a little more proactive in our meetings. So it's not just getting it done faster. It's really is being more efficient and more productive in those meetings. And I think that really is kind of a key to the whole thing. So I don't want people to think, I'm just trying to rush through the meeting to be done with it. I'm trying to get the reports done quickly. And I think another benefit, too, because guys are putting their reports in online ahead of time, they're reading each other's before we even show up in the room together. And so we've already had a chance to kind of think some of the issues through and process it before, which has really helped the discussion, too. It's not, guys don't come and go, oh, well, I haven't heard that before. That's news to me. Huh, how do I feel about it? They already know, and so we can engage in the discussion more quickly, too. So I think there's been huge benefits. We've gotten a couple more projects done. And the other thing is, well, we're done in hour 15. We don't go home after an hour 15. Usually someone will bring a beverage and some snacks, and we'll hang out. So it's really, I've seen our council come together more, too. We're bonding more. We're friends outside of the meeting, which has been helping our congregation tremendously. So a lot of benefits I've seen. Some that surprised me. I was thinking more efficient meetings, but we've had a lot of other additional benefits as well.
Right. So somebody would listen to this and say, well, this sounds too good to be true. Were there bumps in the road along the way? Were there maybe objections from different people trying something like this? Maybe some of that weren't as tech savvy. What went wrong in the process? What do you have to watch out for?
Yeah, initially, guys, some guys were not crazy about entering their reports online. In Alaska, we still have a couple guys with dial-up. I know that sounds unheard of today, but and they were like, I don't know that we can do this and swing it. A lot of them didn't want to read the minutes online, so I try and make it readily available for everyone. I send out a reminder. Let's say our meeting is going to be on a Thursday. I'll send a reminder out on Monday. Don't forget about our meeting. Please submit your report. And I give them, here's three ways you can do it. You can give me a paper copy of your report by Wednesday, and then I'll type it in for you. Or you can email it to me by Thursday at 3, for our meetings at 7. Or you can put it in directly yourself by 6:30 that night. And so some guys would still give me the paper one. Some guys would send me an email, I don't know how to do this thing. Here's my report, Pastor. But for the most part, they've all come on board now. So initially, this was scary, it's different, it's new. And then they saw how easy it is. And then other guys were doing it and said, well, if that guy can do it, he has dial-up, I can figure it out. So now they're all totally on board. With the minutes, or the reports even for that matter, at the end of the meeting, it's really easy just to hit print. And I pin a copy up on the bulletin board. And I offer, if anyone wants paper copy stuck in their church mailbox, I'm happy to stick a copy in there too. I've had no takers on that. But I think it's really opened up communication in the congregation, too, because the congregation at large knows, you know, we don't do this with elders. Let me be clear there. We've got some sensitive issues that we don't advertise. But anyone in the congregation can go to our council minutes at any time and see exactly what was said and done. So there's been a lot more transparency in the congregation, too. And I used to get some complaints, it's maybe too strong of a word, but concerns that the council is not communicating to the congregation very well. And now, anytime anyone asks, well, here's where you can go. It's on the bulletin board. I've got a print copy if you're scared of computers. But there's also this link you can go to and find any of our meeting minutes at any time. And so that's really helped, I think, in other ways that have been surprising to me, too. So, yeah, initially there was some kickback, but now everybody's on board and are loving it as we see the benefits.
Excellent. Well, sounds like you've made some real strides with your meetings. I wonder what else is next for the Faster Pastor.
Well, like I said, I'm going to keep working on that website. It's a little more work than I anticipated it would be to create your own site with all these tips. And so I'm going to try and keep plugging away on that and add some stuff from time to time. And I'd love to continue to get your guys' feedback. And I really want to make it kind of like you have with the Wells, you know, tech. I want to make it open source. So if I get other tips and tricks from other people, I'll continue to add that. Last year in January, I was invited to speak at a conference on using Google in ministry. I've been invited back this year to speak specifically on Google Forms. So that's something I'll be trying to put together, how I do my registration process for our vacation Bible schools and our Christmas for Kids and things like that, using Google Forms and a number of other ways I use Google Forms as well. So I'll share some of that with the guys in the Pacific Northwest here. So that's on the agenda, along with just regular ministry here in Grace.
That's the good stuff. Thank you, Rob. We really appreciate you taking the time. And for those that want to follow the Faster Pastor, what is the web address for that?
TheFasterPastor.com.
TheFasterPastor.com. Wonderful.
Thanks, Rob. And that whole interview will be plugged into the Sway that, Sally, you were talking about. And so that you can go back and relive that as well. But thanks, Rob, for taking the time to share that. I knew that he would come up with something special, our new Faster Pastor.
Definitely. You know, one thing that I really enjoyed that I wasn't expecting when we interviewed Rob was that emphasis on fellowship and the fact that their efficiency in meetings now allows them to spend more time together and grow in their relationships with one another. And that just ties right back to the book and the importance of building your teams and encouraging each other. So really neat lanyap, little something extra that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah. Sally, why don't you tell the good folks where they can find our little book?
Oh, that's a great idea, Martin. Well, we have our very own domain name with allyourheart.tech, or if you're over on the Wells Tech website, you can actually find it in the sidebar. There's a link there to read along with All Your Heart. And each chapter is detailed there, as well as the different artifacts that we're creating, templates and examples that we're doing for each chapter. So head on over and you're going to find a link to chapter 4. And it's got all that great stuff that we just talked about. So please do check it out.
Yeah, we love to hear feedback as it's not too late to actually make additions, edits, you know, make the book even better based on your feedback. So please take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the next segment of our show, which is always News in Tech.
And it's been a pretty newsworthy week this week in technology. One article that I found and wanted to share, Martin, is from CNN Money, and it's What is 5G? So we're just now enjoying all the benefits of 4G cellular networks. The smartphones we run typically are on 4G, but in this article, you're going to hear about how smartphone companies are developing already 5G technology. And they have a little chart on there. Back in 1991, we were 2G, and that was good enough for texting. We've advanced to 4G, which allows us internet access and even video. But 5G, it says ultra HD and 3D video capabilities, as well as a smart home. So interestingly, I always thought it had to do with gigabytes, that the G was how fast it was in gig. But they define it here. The G actually stands for generation, so it would be the fifth generation of wireless network technology. And they say the elevator pitch, 5G will be faster, smarter, and less power hungry than 4G, enabling a slew of new wireless gadgets. 5G will let us have faster smartphones, more smart home devices, and longer lasting wearable gizmos. So read a little bit about the future. I think they target perhaps 2020 is the year that 5G will be here in our lives, but they're doing the planning and putting the infrastructure in place now to support that.
Very good. I have a couple of items that I want to share in this segment as well, Sally. One of them is our good friend Dropbox, which we've talked about in the past, as I think maybe even a pick, is shutting down a couple of their long-running apps. One of them is their Mailbox app, which was kind of a email client, and I actually can't say that I used it, but I know a lot of people did. It was an acquisition they made back in 2013, so they are shuttering that, and maybe even more useful and something that I actually used a little bit was their product called Carousel, which was kind of a photo viewing application. So they were encouraging you to put your photos into Dropbox, which is not a bad idea. They get backed up, etc. And had kind of a nice visual appeal to the display of your photos. But those are all going away, I think, as early as this winter. So if you are using either of those two services, you may want to make sure you get your stuff out of there. Switch gears here. The second article or news item that I wanted to share is about Gmail. And let me share screen one more time. And Gmail is obviously, most people know, a free email service. And you also may know that they have kind of a new product called Inbox, which takes your Gmail and puts it into a more graphical, rich interface. And it's one that I use on my phone for my Gmail account. You can also use it on your computer as well. The news is that maybe people are pushing, or maybe Google is pushing, are pushing their users out of Gmail into the new Inbox interface. And it's been a little consternation of that. Apparently, if you get this message that, hey, you're getting moved over, you can turn it off. But I think the writing might be on the wall here that Inbox is ultimately going to become the new Gmail. So we'll see how this goes over the next couple months. But actually, I wouldn't have too much of a problem using Inbox. I like the way it works, but it may not be for everybody. And if it's not for you, then you can turn it off, at least for now. So, Sally, yeah. Do you use a Gmail client, or have you tried Inbox?
I have tried Inbox, and I went back to the Gmail client. So when I saw that headline, and it said Gmail ending, my heart maybe skipped a little beat for a second. It's the day and age that we live in that we come to depend on these things and have expectations of these different web-based tools or softwares or whatever, but yet we don't have control over you know, what they do with their products and stuff. We saw that with Google Reader. I'm still mourning the loss of Google Reader, and I think that had a huge effect on how people use RSS, because a lot of people had invested in Reader and just didn't spend the time to reinvest in another RSS client. And so they do have some power over us, and we'll see how Google chooses to use it in that arena. But for now, I'm sticking with Gmail, I think.
All right.
Just me.
For as long as you can.
As long as I can.
Let's move on to Wells Now. Next
segment. A couple of things worth mentioning. This Sunday afternoon and evening will be the Christmas concert at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. The times are 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Central there at the seminary. And the 3 p.m. service will be live streamed. So we'll include a link in our show notes to their live stream site so that you can watch that if you are so inclined. Always a really big highlight of the Christmas season. And then we also want to mention that they have unveiled the newest interactive faith Bible study, which will be coming up starting Wednesday, January 13th. We have Reverend Gary Pufall, who is serving at Christ in Big Bend, Wisconsin. And the topic of his study, which will last through February 3rd, is Who is Your God for Whom You Live? He'll be doing it twice each Wednesday night at 6 p.m. and again at 8 p.m. Central Time. And it's a great opportunity. We've had a lot of people gather members of their church perhaps at church or in someone's home, to watch and listen to the Bible study. There's opportunity throughout where the presenter pauses and allows you to have group discussion and kind of wrestle with some of the questions and things that are provided, and really good feedback on those who have participated in the interactive faith Bible studies. So mark your calendar and plan to attend starting January 16th.
Yeah, not only mark your calendar because you can certainly attend individually as a family, whatever, but let your pastor know, let your congregation know that this is available. A lot of churches do that where they will have kind of a night, Wednesday night, where they'll bring everybody together and take advantage of that as a Christian group. So, Sally, I think we are to our picks of the week.
We are, and it seems that one of my areas of interest recently has focused on copyright issues, which is a very important topic for our churches and schools to pay attention to, and I recently came across this website. It's called pdinfo.com, and it's specifically focusing on public domain music. And so if you go to the public domain music link there, you can find a list of items that are in the public domain. So if you're just trying to figure out if a piece of music is in public domain, they really have pretty short description of it up here. Any song or musical work published in 1922 or earlier is in the public domain in the United States. All public domain information on the site is related to United States copyright law. And so you can just look at list of songs by alphabetical. They have it kind of divided between best known and less known public domain songs. But there's also a link here to Christian public domain hymns, where you can just see an alphabetical listing of things they're aware of that are in the public domain. And so a good place to check if you're looking for public domain works that maybe would be safer to use. You wouldn't have copyright concerns so much about works of music that are in the public domain. It's pdinfo.com, so check it out.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Telling my pick, and I do this every once in a while, not too often, but every once in a while, is a book. And this happens to be a paper book, not available in electronic format, so that's why I have the paper book. But one advantage of doing the paper book is you can get it signed by the author. So
cool.
One of the authors actually signed this copy for me. It's called The Art of Virtue-Based Transformational Leadership: Building Strong Businesses, Organizations, and Families by Mark McCluskey and Jim Lausma. Jim Lausma was the author who signed my book. Was down in El Paso, Texas, participating in some leadership training, and they had Jim in to talk a little bit about some of the concepts in his book. Excellent book for almost anybody. Just because it has leadership in the name doesn't necessarily mean that this is really only for leaders. It could be for family leaders, for parents, for obviously church leaders, pastors, teachers, etc. What I like about it is it takes the life of Nehemiah from what we know in the book of Nehemiah and pulls out some of the leadership qualities that we've actually already talked about in, I think, last chapter of our book. And to be honest, I didn't pull the information from here. It was almost an afterthought. I thought, hey, there was a book I read not too long, a while ago, I guess, that talked about Nehemiah as leader. And I pulled it out, reread it again, and I'm going to read it with my leadership team here. Really talks about leadership from a Christian perspective, that it's not about what the world thinks a leader should be and success and, you know, all the other metrics that go along with how people measure whether somebody is a good leader or not, results-driven, etc., but takes it from a very biblical perspective and walks us through some of the characteristics that Nehemiah exhibited when he went back and rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. A very difficult project, and he did it in a very God-pleasing, awe-inspiring way. So you can see that, those of you that are watching, it's not a long book. You can read it in half a day or whatever, but good exercises in here. You can't get the book on Amazon, unfortunately. You have to go to their website, and their website is jmarkpartners.com. So you have to go to the website and place your order there. There's other resources on the site as well. Gives a little description. You can download excerpts from the book, so you can get a sense for if this book is for you or not. I can't imagine that somebody would say that it's not. An excellent walkthrough of what leadership is from a biblical sense, and kind of a step-by-step approach that helps people understand, hey, I'm kind of doing it wrong, and there are different things that I should be thinking about differently to be a value-based transformational leader. So that is my pick, The Art of Virtue-Based Transformational Leadership by McCloskey and Lausma.
Wow, it sounds like a great read, just like you said, for just about anyone. And, you know, just spending some time reading doesn't mean you're going to adopt everything you read, but it sure does give you some ideas and things to customize to fit to your particular
makes
situation.
You think, yep.
So, yeah, something wrong good stuff. That.
Yep. Speaking of thinking, we thought that ministry resources might be a good segment to have on our show, and we try and fill it up with good stuff each and every week, and I think we've done that this week.
I think so too, Martin. We have a blog post from Church Tech Today. Our friend Lauren Hunter runs this blog where she talks about all things technology and ministry. And in this article, someone I think is guest writing, but it's 10 reasons video should be on your radar in 2016. So maybe the upcoming holiday season will give you an opportunity to consider and plan for 2016 initiatives. And if that's the case, perhaps you need to consider video. And some really good points here and things that I hadn't thought of. Improve search engine optimization, so people are able to find you better as you're posting video. Better information retention, people remember what's in a video maybe more than reading it. Online video builds trust. It allows you to connect beyond barriers, and it's very much financially accessible. They give the example that cameras back in the day maybe cost $120,000, they said, and now you can get decent equipment for under the $1,000 price point. So lots of barriers have broken in that regard. It's an opportunity for creatives to get involved in ministry efforts. So definitely a creative outlet there. Gives you some control over things. Maybe you'd want someone to speak to your congregation or whatever, but this way you can do it on video and perhaps do some editing or reshoot things or whatever it may need to be. And it also listed, it's the 10th thing on the list, is to help you improve by videotaping perhaps a sermon or a teacher in the classroom or whatever, and getting together to critique the methods that you use in presenting and things like that. So 10 good reasons to think about using video in your church and school settings. And we'll have a link in the show notes to that blog post.
Very good. Speaking of video, we have one to share. From the, is this from the MLC concert that you just were at over the weekend?
That I was just at last Christmas. Yes, it is,
oh,
Martin, actually.
Oh, a year ago. Okay.
Yeah, but actually it is the MLC tradition to end with the song, O Jesus Christ, Thy Manger Is. And it's a beautiful hymn, and the choirs all join together to sing it, and then they exit humming it, and then the college choir, the highest level elite choir, ends humming it by the back baptismal font before they exit. It's a really beautiful thing to be a part of, and they did the same thing this Saturday night, even though this video is from last year. So definitely one that you'll enjoy. O Jesus Christ, Thy Manger Is, the tradition here at MLC.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Next week is our last community feedback for the year for 2015. And as longtime listeners or even short-time listeners know, for the last couple months here, we've been dedicating a show a month to just to community feedback. And we're going to do that next week. If you want to be part of that, you need to leave some community feedback. And you can do that by sending an email, wellstech@wells.net. Go to our show notes page, leave a comment there, or visit one of the many social networks where you find Wells Tech, Google+, Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, the list goes on, or the listserv even is out there. But wellstech.wells.net is the place to go where you can find all those links, and tell us what you're thinking about, what you're considering technology-wise and ministry-wise, and we would love to bring it up on the show and tell you what we think as well. So that's coming up next week, so tune in for that.
Looking forward to it, Martin, always. 422 is in the bag now.
422, 423 on the way, and we hope you'll join us next week for that. Blessings on your Advent preparations, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.